Hello, hello, guys. You're listening to Beauty Bites with Dr. K, Secrets of a Plastic Surgeon. And today on the podcast, I am so excited to introduce you to Cindy Eckert.
Thank you.
And she is CEO of
Addie.
I said it correctly. All right. Addie. And you guys, this is a revolutionary topic we're going to dive in today. This is a pill that's also called the female Viagra.
Yes.
It's a liberating pill that helps you reach sexual wellness, sexual revolution. It's a conversation that people aren't having with their doctor's office. So we're welcoming this billionaire boss girl who has sold several companies and done quite a lot of entrepreneurship to launch this for women everywhere. Welcome to the podcast, Cindy.
Thank you, Dr. K. I'm so happy to be here. And I'm actually just, I love that you're bringing this topic to your audience because that's what I think opens this wide open, you know, unlocks it for women, if you will, is that other women start to spill the tea on what are these things that we can do to improve this quality of our life.
That's true. Women gatekeep. Some of those that are on it are not telling everybody about it. And some have never discovered it. This was my first year of learning about Addie. And I wanted to bring this knowledge to everybody. So tell us about what is Addie. It's a pink pill.
Yes.
How often do people take it and how does it work?
Okay, so it is not female Viagra. It's so much more interesting. Addie works on your brain. It's a non-hormonal pill. You take once daily at bedtime. It's one dose. It's 100 milligrams. And it really works on our biggest sex organ, which is right here. So I like to say women are brain flow, not blood flow.
Uh-huh.
And that's really an important distinction. You know, when Addie was discovered, it was actually being studied as a mood drug.
Hmm.
So it works on dopamine and serotonin. You know, we know lots of medications that do that are antidepressants, anti-anxiety medications. And one of their most common side effects is that they decrease your libido.
Hmm.
And so the thesis, of course, scientifically was, well, wait a minute. If we can work on, you know, these neurotransmitters and cause a decrease in sex drive, then you could probably also work on them and cause an increase. And that's basically Addie in a nutshell. And it was a bit discovered by accident. You know, it's funny, like there are a lot of parallels to the blue pill.
Mm-hmm.
The blue pill was a blood pressure medication that had a really interesting side effect. You know, the little pink pill was being studied as a mood drug, also with a very interesting side effect, which is increasing your interest in sex.
That's so interesting. So it's currently FDA approved for women with low sexual desire.
Yes.
And how is that process of getting a drug through the FDA?
Because
like they don't think women's health issues are an issue. Like apparently 50% of the population can just go through menopause and rot and it doesn't matter and you don't have to have research or drugs to help them.
This is such an important conversation that's happening right now in women's health and really that disparity in women's health. So it won't surprise any of you that the path through the FDA similarly was not quite the same for the first product for women's sexual health compared to the product for men's. I love, you know, for all the women listening, when you think about this, you just need to keep asking yourself the question, but what if the pill had been blue? But what if the pill had been blue? And I'll tell you, here's the difference. So pink pill versus blue pill. When Viagra was approved for men, it was deemed to meet such an important unmet medical need.
Mm-hmm.
This is how much we value sexual satisfaction for men that it actually received rare fast track status through the FDA.
Oh, Jesus, that's
it
so interesting.
It was approved in 6 months. So really important to give men pleasure. When Addie went through, it took 6 years.
Oh, wow.
And we had 3 times as many patients worth of data in our clinical trials. Like that is so glaringly obvious how much we value pleasure.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it was, you know, we were early, so we're the first. You know, I think you sometimes recognize pioneers by all the arrows in their back.
Right.
When we dared to have this conversation about, like, women deserve to live a satisfying sex life.
Mm-hmm.
Women deserve pleasure. The world wasn't really ready to talk about it. And so a lot of the news headlines were pretty dismissive, rude. I can remember to this day that one of the early headlines said, female Viagra, question mark. And then it said, isn't that jewelry?
Oh, my God. Really? That's so rude.
And my answer is no. It's spectacular science.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this was a desire discovery. What is it that can unlock this for women? And the answer was, it can unlock in the brain. And if we do that, we give millions of women back a sense of their own confidence, their own connection with their body, their connection with their partners. And it was so trivialized. Like, all the comments and nonsense and everything else was just revealing, I think, our social conditioning that women are to have sex for reproduction.
Yeah.
And men are to have sex for pleasure.
Mm.
And I
women
think
are designed
that's
to suffer
a and design
too.
And that's that yeah. suffering is acceptable for women,
right?
Honestly.
From the time you get your first period till the time
absolutely
you get through
right.
menopause, there's always a little suffering in being a
that's
woman.
Right. And actually, I was having this conversation about, like, it's always around pain. Like, mm-hmm. women have to suffer enough to deserve something. Mm-hmm. So it's really like a pain metric as opposed to a pleasure metric, or like improving the quality of your life.
Now, why do women's brains go through this? Is there yeah. something neurochemically that happens to deteriorate those pleasure centers? Or are you just so inundated with daily life and the grind and the mothering and all the things that we do that you suppress it?
I think that's it's an excellent question. I think it's a lot of discussion in, like, the scientific communities today. Why do we have so many women? Mayo Clinic just put out some data. 40% of women will experience this at some point in their lifetime. Mm-hmm. So I think a lot of the discussion is it secondary to potentially long-term use of birth control? Mm. Is it, you know, is it a factor, as you said, of, like, just today's inundation of all of those things? Not surprisingly, women who struggle with this, so the medical term for it, we talk about it as low libido, mm-hmm. as just sort of to understand the common term, but the medical term for that is HSDD, hypoactive or low sexual desire disorder. And, you know, they're classically type A women.
Mm.
So
yes.
honestly, it's that, you know, information processing part of the brain is like on overdrive.
Yeah.
They're lying in bed and they're doing their to-do list and, oh, I need to do this and do this. And they never kind of shut it down.
It's
to
funny.
Respond to sexual cues. And that shows up in brain scan imaging. That was really a lightning rod moment for me when I was at a medical conference and they put up brain scans of women who were happy with their sex drive. Great. And then women who are like, you know, something's changed.
Yeah.
It's like the switch went out. I don't think about it. I want it. I want to, but I never think about it. And they put them both in MRIs and exposed them to erotica, and their brains lit up totally differently.
Really?
And
it's almost like the fight or flight response that you're chronically in, this high adrenaline phase of managing and literally losing your femininity and bringing on that masculine armor to, like, deal with the world, the world we built around you.
They weren't activating to any of the cues. And so, you know, when patients are responders to that, and no drug is a panacea.
Yeah.
I want to say that, right? Not everybody is going to be a responder. But for those who do, it's funny. The very first thing they report back to doctors is like, oh my gosh, I'm having fantasies and sex dreams and I'm watching the movie and I'm suddenly turned on at the sex scene. And it's really says exactly what we were seeing in those brain scans, like activation in that sex center of the brain is finally, like, able to ignite again. It's
interesting. What do we know what the mechanism of action is?
Yes.
You're taking 100 milligrams a night. I remember you told me that you have to take it for a period of time before it actually will kick in threshold levels. That
built in your system. So built in your system, not unlike a GLP-1 or one of the weight loss drugs, or not unlike an antidepressant. Similarly, so in clinical trials, we saw results continue out. Sort of people it building in your system and kind of getting to where you're going to be at 90 days. That doesn't mean you won't see things before then. So anecdotally, you know, we'll hear like 4 weeks in, or, you know, those, like, people start to see some of those results, but it's continuing to build in your system. So to give it an adequate trial, you really need to give it a 3-month trial. And if you have side effects, you'll know them early that you couldn't tolerate, so you'd go off sooner.
What
than
kind
that.
Of side effects might people report?
Sleepiness is number one.
Oh.
So you take it daily at bedtime. So sleepiness, dizziness, nausea, very classic of medications that work on the brain. But again, you get those, you know, typically very early if you're going to experience them, and then you know whether or not you can tolerate it. And you take it at night at bedtime because of it.
And is this something that you're going to stay on long term, like for many months, or when you stop, do you then go back to your old brain?
You do go back. So we did studies with women coming off the medication and how long it took them to go back down to baseline. So they do return back down to baseline. Mm-hmm. And I think for us, you know, there's no right answer here. For a patient, we have patients who've been on Addy for years and years and, you know, wouldn't live without it. And we have other patients where, you know, they've been in often a sexless marriage. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they've gotten on Addy. Addy sort of restored. It got them back into a place. It's probably changed a bit of the relationship dynamic or improved it in some way as well. And, you know, they might come on and cycle off. They might come back to us. We have a lot of recently divorced women who are Addy users who like want to get back out there. All that. They want to be back to dating and they're like, you know, nervous about it. I've been divorced. I understand it, like getting back out there and everything. So I think there's no standard answer for everyone. We see all different versions. Women who come on it, stay on it for a period of time, and women who've been on it for years and years.
Okay, I love that answer. I was curious too about other benefits of taking Addy, because I understand that once you get your sex drive back, you might be sleeping better. You might be actually losing some weight. Yeah. Tell me about that.
We saw those, you know, in clinical trials. While Addy is, of course, approved really for libido, you watch in clinical trials for other effects. So, a couple things we had to prove. We had to prove not only that you had more desire for sex, but we had to prove that when you had sex, it was more satisfying.
Oh, wow.
So the quality of sex is also improved. Mm-hmm. And I think that's part of, that's a delicious feedback loop. You know, now I'm interested, now I'm having it. When I have it, the quality is better. And, you know, that all goes round and round to be a very good effect. The other thing is we had to actually show that women, we reduced their stress around the issue. Mm. So, you know, if somebody is not having sex and I don't care, like I'm... you'd never be a candidate for this, right? You'd never get this diagnosis. But I think women who are seeking help for this, it's bothering them. You know, it's causing them to not, to feel, again, disconnected from themselves, that like inner sexy, I think, that shows up, you know, in the room with us, or disconnected from the person they want to be the most connected to.
Right.
And in clinical trials, we even showed that a reduction in that stress. So there is a mood element to this, just like we talked about. You are working on dopamine and serotonin, so you do see a mood effect, and we did see, you know, even some weight loss. There's a funny like discussion on that too, of do we trade food and sex, you know, in the brain, like that reward center of the
satiety.
Brain, that satiety. Exactly. Yeah.
Are you satisfied in one way so you don't seek satisfaction with food?
That's exactly right.
Interesting. Yeah. Do the GLP-1s interact with Addy?
Well,
in a good way or anyway?
It totally fine to co-use together. So really interesting that there's a lot of discussion right now. Similarly, I'm in the sex field. I love all of the, you know, the discussion around even GLP-1s. Like on the one hand, you think, oh, like if I have greater body confidence, I'm feeling good in my skin, am I more sexually active? But that appetite suppression also has sexual appetite suppression.
Interesting. Isn't that interesting?
So we do see.
So those of us who've been on Ozempic, it can change your drive for your sex too.
Lots of
alcohol and drugs and all those things that are in the desire centers.
That's right. In the desire centers. Exactly. So that sort of anhedonia discussion right now, really very interesting. There was just a paper out about mechanistically why would that be true of GLP-1s, and then also describing Addy's unique mechanism for how it works on libido.
Wow, I would love to see you guys get that into more clinical use, because I actually hear patients talking about that too.
Yeah, I think it's that's like a growing discussion.
They miss like wanting to ask for a margarita because they just don't crave it anymore. Yes. Or like, you know, I don't know what the pleasure centers of the brain do when you inhibit that.
Right.
The food drive
Is
connected.
Yeah.
Food and sex are very connected.
They are. I mean, I think that's same with us, our observations and trials around weight.
Yeah.
You know, what is that food and sex sort of interplay?
That's tragic, because then you get skinny and you can't even enjoy your sexy new bod. And then you definitely need your Addy.
There you go. Exactly.
And talk a little bit about your journey as an entrepreneur, because I know that this drug has been a passion project for you and the launch of this whole female sexual wellness idea.
Yeah. I think that for me, it was such an, there were 26 FDA-approved drugs for some form of male sexual satisfaction, but not a single one for women when I started.
Wow.
And I ran one of those companies. I built it. Mm-hmm. And so serial entrepreneur, as you said. And I loved being in this space. I think the science of sex is still a very like fascinating area of discovery. And I loved the impact it had on people's lives. Like I was watching, you know, this transform men's lives. And I thought, how in the world can it be that there is nothing for women, even though more women struggle by all the prevalence data than men do? So it is a deeply held passion, and I'm the patient. Mm-hmm. Like I wanted this for me, for, you know, this going into perimenopause, like all of these things changing, mood, weight, your libido, like how can there not be, you know, a non-hormonal solution for us? Even totally fine to use with hormones, but something that really spoke to the mechanism of what's going on. So even to this day, I would tell you, for me, this has always been about changing this conversation for women. Mm-hmm. Addy is a wonderful product. It's studied in 13,000 women. It's got, you know, clinical safety and efficacy data. Take the product or don't take the product. The real atrocity is if you don't even know it exists.
That's right. Or you can't even talk about it to your patients.
If nobody's told you, like, how can it be that I walk into rooms and this is like my party trick, right? I walk into every room and I'm like, by a show of hands, how many of you know there's a little pink pill for women? And more hands are starting to get raised, thank goodness, 10 years into this. But if I similarly then say, how many of you know there's a blue pill for men? The entire room raises their hand. Yeah. How can that be that we're not yet there in this cultural conversation? I think we're getting there.
You but almost need to get women. It thrown into some movies. So I feel like people started knowing Viagra from pop culture and movie references and jokes and comedians.
Yes.
So I feel like you need to get into some good scripts.
I'd like to think we're about to have our GLP-1 moment in the sense that celebrities are starting to admit they're on Addy. Like Hollywood discovered us a few years ago.
Recently, who is it that I've heard? Tell me some names of who's disclosed. Oh, Gwyneth, right?
Didn't she write a great article? Yeah. Her article, I'm going to get the title not exactly right, but like, is the female Viagra revolution finally here?
Yeah.
Like, are we finally going to talk about this thing that we've actually had in our toolbox, but haven't had the conversation with women? Jenny Garth has ads where, you know, so delighted that she's sort of volunteered to us. I'm on Addy.
Oh,
I'd love to say I'm on Addy. And so it's no paid spokespeople yet.
Wow.
But, you know, people coming out and admitting it organically. And I think it's because these are women who know if I say it, it makes it okay
for a lot of
other
women
to say it too. And we sit in our shame and our stigma and, you know, feel very alone in suffering. And, you know, again, you said it earlier, it's sort of okay. Mm-hmm. We let women suffer.
Mm-hmm. It's sort of a cultural acceptance.
It is. Mm-hmm.
So I think cultural acceptance of women suffering is a huge thing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you're just born into the mentality that you got to tough up, you're a girl.
Yeah, it's really true. And actually, we sort of, when women bring up things that they are struggling with, I feel like sometimes in medical conversations, not in this office, but in certain offices, it's like they have to like prove it that they've suffered enough. If I think about early days with Addy and like all that fodder, you know, in media, more or less the takeaway was, well, how much more sex is enough for women to get this?
Right.
Like we were deciding like, how many more times does she have sex in order for her to deserve a pill? And I thought, are you kidding me? Like women are going from not having sex to having satisfying sex or having mercy sex in a relationship because they love their partner. They're not really that interested, but they're, you know, participating to having like satisfying sex. Like, I can't believe that we're actually even in this discussion, but I find that conversation still happens even sometimes in an OBGYN office.
It really does. I mean, I think women have to beg for hormone replacement.
Yes.
Like
yes.
they physically feel something's wrong with themselves.
And yes.
normal OB-GYN, conventional med school educated people just never got that teaching, never
That's
got
right.
that chapter, and did not go out and beyond into the wild blue and learn it for themselves.
That's
so they're
right.
not giving it to their patients.
It's honestly one of the most fun things. Like I've been on this journey for a long time. You know, it started... how many years, 14, 15 years ago now, what's been such a fun observation for me is that women are walking into the offices where they've already been vulnerable, right? They're with a trusted provider, like, oh, I'm worried about these wrinkles, or can you help me with this? And they're similarly now having this conversation around sexual health and wellness. And so I feel like women are storming the gates of med spas in midlife.
Yeah.
And actually, you're becoming the caregiver of women for this phase of their life, because it's not just reproduction, fertility, right? They want to talk about these other things. And I think they don't just want to address external beauty. They want to talk about internal beauty. Like, I want to feel my inner sexy. I want to look my outer sexy, right? I want those go hand in hand.
They have permission in our aesthetic offices to show their vulnerabilities to say where I don't feel pretty, I don't feel good about myself here, and can you help me? And also, like, we've been doing sexual wellness shots and, like, treatments, like, vaginal rejuvenation, radio frequencies. So I feel like we are a good starting point for that conversation of where you don't feel good about yourself and how you want to fix it. Because honestly, it's very medicalized when you go into the OB-GYN world. And it's like you have a problem, you need a prescription, you need a solution, but it's really just super focused on medical health.
And it doesn't, you know, it doesn't comes that naturally while you're sitting in stirrups for your one visit a year to be like, how's your sex life? You know, I think that
it's
is
like
probably
pass fail. It's probably pass fail.
So it's fun because I think we see so many women saying, like, well, where do I go get Addie?
Yeah.
And we've got, you know, a growing list, obviously, on our website, but you're going to find it's really dominated by a med spa.
I'm so curious.
That environment.
I really would not have expected that. I would think that the OB-GYNs would want to stake claim on this territory.
Yeah.
But I can also understand that, you know, this is like what we're doing in aesthetics is a performance industry. Like, we want people to achieve their best selves, and that includes peptides and IV shots and hormone replacement, everything.
It's longevity and wellness. And I think that's really, it's elective care in a lot of ways, right? Yeah. And I think that's where Addie sort of lives in the mindset, even of the midlife woman.
Right, where you don't have to accept what nature has given you. Yes. You can tweak it and improve your, you know, improve your performance. But your concept of wanting to look beautiful, like, people think that pleasure and women trying to achieve that sexual happiness in their lives is kind of superfluous. And maybe women are criticized for wanting that. But I tell patients that the pursuit of beauty is noble. And wanting beauty in your life and that in your sex life, like, that's what life is. That's the meaning of life.
It is. Honestly. I mean, if you look at our hierarchy of needs, right? I mean, connection is in the top five. And naturally it is. Like, we're human beings. None of us would be here without sex. So it's not a surprise that, you know, your sexual health and wellness and feeling good about that part of your life is a critical part of your overall quality of life. And it should not be marginalized. I think that you think about things we've marginalized over time. Like, if you go way back in history, I think we've had a few health revolutions. I think we had a physical health revolution where we really put a focus on that. I think then we had a mental health revolution where it became permissible to discuss and really understand and not shame people who are struggling. I think the next frontier is sexual health. I think that's been the missing part. And, like, all of those things go in, you know, in tandem with each other. And let's be honest, there are health benefits to great sex. There are meaningful health benefits, even as much as I, what if the pill had been blue, talk about Viagra. You know, Viagra opened up a ton of research and development in men's health. It gave us a lot of learnings in overall men's health, not just related to their erection. So
I love it. Well, I want to switch gears and talk about you a little bit. You have been building billion-dollar brands. You personally have sold two companies for over $1.5 billion. What do you kind of think are some of the essential traits in female founders today in these male-dominated worlds of pharma and science tech?
There's so few of us, I have to tell you. Like, in the running healthcare companies, and that makes no sense when women dominate the healthcare decisions. So to have a female perspective, also make sure that we get to see the products we want to see in this world.
Yeah.
You know, if you don't struggle with something, it's not surprising that you'd be sort of blinded to the opportunity. Mm-hmm. I think that female founders in particular have to have unbelievable strength of conviction, mm-hmm. because you will be doubted. You will be underestimated. It mm-hmm. is a guarantee. And actually, you should go into a room and demand that if you're in a conversation with somebody who might invest in you, or you're, you know, interested in presenting the opportunity to you, that somebody who can relate to it is in the room with them. Mm-hmm. You know, I say I'll put myself on the hot seat. If somebody came to me with the next greatest invention in golf, I'd be like, okay. I don't golf. But you know what? If they said to me, hey, Cindy, make sure you have golfers in the room, and I sat there and all the golfers were like, that is the best thing I've ever, that's going to change my game, I would consider it very differently. So I think, you know, female founders in particular have an unbelievably empathetic drive mm-hmm. to solve a problem that they have firsthand experience with. And then they must have unbelievable, you know, strength of conviction to go through all the headwinds coming at them.
And then tell us about the journey where you developed the drug.
Yeah.
And then sold it. And then what happened?
I guess the path to the pink pill was never going to be a straight line. I should have known. But, you know, it was such actually a cultural battle mm-hmm. that shouldn't have been, because it's just science, yeah. right? It's just proving points of efficacy and safety. But it was such a cultural battle to finally win FDA approval, finally get one for women, 26 for men, one for women. We had really sort of the dream come true. Like, I had the entrepreneur's dream come true. I sold the business to a huge company. Mm-hmm. You know, they were going to march it across the globe, make it affordable for women. And then they never launched it.
They shelved it. They bought the success story and all your hard work, and then they shelved it. Wow.
I think that's probably the most depressing years of my life. Honestly, like, just sat on the sidelines.
Even though you'd made all this money.
It was never about it, yeah. right? It was really never about that. It was about really making sure women have access and changing this conversation to, like, win, then sell it to, you know, big pharma.
Prove that it works. Yeah.
Sell it to big pharma. And then all of these women who'd, like, cheered for me, come to meetings at the FDA, all the doctors who'd been champions of it, to then, like, them not be able to get it. Mm. It was crushing. And so, you know, ultimately, I suited up again, put on the boxing gloves, fought Big Pharma, got it back, and have launched it on my own terms. But it's been a wild ride to get here. And yes, for sure, there was monetary success.
You got your
success.
Money back, and you got your drug back. I just want to say high five.
Thank you. I know. Sold it for $1 billion. They never launched it. Ended up going after them, kept the billion, got it back, and invest in other even female founders today to that point. And, you know, but it really, I will tell you, for me, like, when I dream of success, it never looks like money. It looks like impact.
Yeah. Honestly, I feel that that's very true for people like yourselves who've propelled to that next level of how can you actually change lives?
Yeah. So it didn't matter. My bank account had changed, but, like, that burning desire to really change this for women was still there. And it was devastating, like, when no women could get it. It wasn't.
Well, what a victory to get it back.
It's great.
And now
I know.
Get to relaunch it with your own vision.
Yes, for sure. And that's been its own road.
It's a rebirth.
Right? It's its own road. You put up all your ads. Meta takes them all down because they say sex.
Jesus Christ.
You know, fight with, like, it's one sort of, I think it's been, like, just, you know, busting through the door one by one by one by one to break the barrier to get it to this place. But I think we're here.
And is there still only one drug for female
sexual
desire? There are two. Desire?
Okay, one other two. Came after us. It's an injection. It's called Vyleesi. Mm. So women now have two. So I think the score now is 29 versus 2.
Okay.
More have come. but there's still a good way to go. But we have more science in women in this medication than any of the male drugs have in men. Like, that's something to be celebrated.
Oh,
that's
yeah.
actually spectacular. And there are solutions for women. And now we just need to make sure they're aware that they exist.
And you described a concept called the pink ceiling. What's the yes. pink ceiling philosophy?
So honestly, it is, you know, reaching my hand back and getting other female founders faster to outcomes than I got there myself. Like mm-hmm. that, I think, once you've achieved an exit like that, how do you help other women get there more quickly and bust through the pink ceiling that does exist for women? It does exist for female founders. You know, every year, like, you know, the data comes out, how much of venture funding goes to female founders. And, you know, we just really can't crack 2%.
Mm-hmm.
We really think that half the population has 2% of the good ideas.
Mm-hmm.
That's
so this is like women-led entrepreneurship.
Yeah. In yeah. women's health, I really do stick to that lane. Like, I do think I'm a total science snob. I believe women deserve products studied in our bodies, held to the highest bar of, you know, scientific scrutiny mm-hmm. that demonstrates safety and efficacy. And I think that's really one of the, we don't talk about the injustice, if you will, of like we get a dog's breakfast of products sold to us that haven't really been studied.
Mm-hmm.
Versus like if something goes wrong for men, like it gets dedicated resource studied in their bodies,
right.
real endpoints. And that's just not right. We get pretty packaging.
Yeah. I mean, that's such an inequity that just has to change at such an entry level. I hope that today's young girls going into science and entrepreneurship are yes. going to get this mentoring.
Yes.
And like see the direction that they need to go in. You have another philosophy that you yeah. want to make women really rich.
I do.
And any advice to aesthetic entrepreneurs that are out there listening?
You know, I think you're already in the right path. Like it's about getting skin in the game. I think that's what it is, right? I'm going to control my own destiny in terms of participating in the value that I create. I think that is, you know, typically we're sort of working at the mercy of somebody else. We might be their hardest worker, especially women, like dutiful worker. We work so hard. You
yeah.
know, we want to be recognized, but you're actually not cut in on any of it. And I think it's about doing the thing that really every day, right, fuels you.
Mm-hmm.
Like you get up, you want to go and give it so much. And I think there are structuring ideas when you sell your business that I have advice on as well, like how you do that.
How to make yourself really rich.
Yes.
I love that. I think we talked a little bit about female biohacking
yeah.
and this whole quest for longevity and
yes.
wellness that we're seeing in med spas. How do you think that Addie relates to that?
I think it's right now, there's a TEDx talk out by a doctor named Dr. Mo Kira, and it's about sex span. So, you know, we've talked about, like, if you think about this notion of our lifespan is increasing. Then we talk about health span. How much of that life that you're now living longer, are you healthy?
Mm-hmm.
And he's got a great talk about, and how much of that longer life are you having the kind of sex life that you want? Like, to me, that's a part of it, right? How do I live my best life?
Mm-hmm.
And I think about that even to, you know, hacking your sex life and making sure that that's a considered part of the overall equation.
I think we have to start training women to think now about the things they do now to build their future you.
Yes.
Because you have to imagine when
yes.
you're 75.
That's right.
Are you going to be on traveling the world with your love
yes.
and having
yes.
some romance along the
right.
way? Or are you going to be in a wheelchair and using a walker? And like you have to build that version of yourself right now.
Absolutely. I heard a talk at South By and I thought it was such a powerful image. And this physician was saying, like, you really do have a choice to make. I have my patients who come in, you know, in their 70s, 80s, and they come into my office in a walker. And then I have a whole nother group that comes in with their pickleball racket.
Right.
Which one
yes.
are you going to be?
We have that too. The cute match. They have a matchy outfit,
yes.
lipstick and a purse that
yes.
matches and a little.
And they're
they're doing their best.
We love, you would not believe the kind of emails we get to a company with a pink pill. So we love to read it. But the number of women who write us about their sex life in their 70s and 80s, whether or not they're even on Addy, like they're sort of you go girl around this. And I love it. Like that's who I want to be.
Right.
I want to be her.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want to be sitting like distantly away from each other on the couch.
It's every single day we take a choice and we don't realize that we need to make the correct decisions right now.
Right.
You really have to invent the future you, you know?
Yeah, that's a great perspective. Good one for my nieces, too. I always say to my nieces, I want a world in which you think it's ridiculous that we didn't talk about this openly.
Aw, I love that.
So.
Well, let's finish with some fast, rapid fire facts just for fun. Yes. What's your morning routine must have?
An iced tea. Like, I think I walked in with a gallon that's sitting right off screen here. So I run on iced tea.
I love it. Do you have a supplement stack that you take, like your biohacking stack?
You know, I am a hormones and Addy girl mostly. that's my secret to my success. So that's mostly what I take.
Tell me one woman who inspires you now.
Oh, God, there's so many. So many. You know, honestly, if I have a hero in my story, it's a female physician.
I love that.
Like, I love
someone needs to write a book about this.
Women who care for other women, like, and women who are daring to say out loud, even the establishment that they're in, that is broken for the care of women. Like, you're the change.
I love it. I just met Mary Claire Haver.
Oh, yes. Wonderful.
Author of The New Menopause. Yes. If you guys haven't read, you need to read that
Absolutely
book.
Absolutely right.
Because she's one of those women physicians who stood up for 50% of the population and said, what the F is
Absolutely
going on
right.
here? Talk to your doctors and do better, American doctors.
That's right. I met Mary Claire in 2016, right after Addy got approved. And I've loved watching that. And I think her idea that suffering is optional is such an important message that women need to hear around their health.
I love that. What's your favorite way to unwind after a busy day or a pitch meeting?
So I have a very unusual host of animals in my backyard. I have I affectionately call it Pink Acres, but I have two pigs, five chickens, two dogs. So me with animals is my happy place.
Oh, I love that. Yeah. I'm going to have to come visit.
Yeah, you do. You have to go.
I'm a full-on garden animal girl, too.
Oh, there you go. Love it.
All right. One more question. If not pharma, what other industry would you disrupt next?
Oh, I want to be in yours. I want to be in beauty. You need to teach me all your secrets.
Oh, yes. I love that. Yes. Our industry is growing by leaps and bounds. The tech and the new tools and the molecular innovations of cellular aging.
It's going
to be
it.
Insane this next decade of aesthetics.
Fun.
Well, it's been such a pleasure to interview you.
Thank you.
I am so excited to have more patients know that Addy is out there.
Thank you, Dr. K.
And to just understand that you don't have to just lose all that desire that you had in your 20s and 30s.
That's right.
It's in you. We have to rekindle it.
That's right. I love it.
How can people find you if they want to connect?
Please follow me at Cindy Pink CEO. You'll hear all my rants on women's health. And also, you know, if you're interested in the product, just Addy. It's ADDYI.com.
I love it. And you can find that at many different med spas and hopefully coming here soon. We'll take a look at that for you guys. Don't forget to find me on my Instagram. It's Beauty by Dr. K, DrKay. And our website is the same, beautybydrk.com. I hope you'll come and visit if you're ever in LA or Pasadena area. And I am definitely going to check out your Instagram.
Thank you.
Can't wait to learn more about Addy.
Thank you.
That's it for now, guys. Stay beautiful.